Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, baby, started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Slugo Wasserman back for another hour of the Soiltopia Green Power Wellness Show. Glad to have you aboard. We're in the middle of primary season here. And things are going wild and woolly. We have a great guest, a regular on the show, Steve Rosenfeld, with us. You know, talk to us. Steve has been in New Hampshire and Iowa, and is now on his way to Nevada. So we want the inside scoop on this, and also we're going to have John Breaker with us. John, are you with us yet? Okay, John Brakey, I'm going to text him now. We'd like to have him on to talk about all the incredible campaigning he's doing to save the ballot if you text the vote. Steve, you're in a car driving to Las Vegas, is that right?
Yep. Can you hear me? Hello, all right. Nice to be here.
Huh?
Nice to be here.
Audience.
Okay.
All right, so Steve Rosenfeld, you've been writing extensively this year, and you've been on the campaign trail, tracking down all the insanities with the various Democratic primaries and all their foul-ups and craziness. So let's start at the top. Let's start with Iowa, where you spent significant time. We're on the scene, and then we'll go to New Hampshire, and we'll talk about New Hampshire. Then we'll deal with Nevada, which you're about to cover. So Nevada, the primary is Tuesday, is that right?
It's Saturday, and there was early voting this past weekend from Saturday and Monday and Tuesday. Sort of in the middle now.
The question we're going to ask, of course, is how badly are the Democrats going to screw this one up? But let's start with Iowa. Iowa was a cluster fiasco, as we might want to politely put it, and a very, very complicated situation, and you know it probably better than anybody, so give us a rundown, if you can, on what happened and didn't happen, and where was the source of the craziness in Iowa?
Well, Iowa, like Nevada, is not a government-run election. It's a state party run caucus, and a caucus is like a town meeting where you have rounds of voting. And what the folks in Iowa tried to do was they tried to use some digital tools, an app on a phone to report the results, and they had a back end to try to compile them. And both ran into trouble because they weren't tested properly, and they weren't tested in a real election. And then the help desk that the folks in the Iowa Democratic Party had to try to handle this as they tried to compile things by hand couldn't handle the volume. So people and then the news media started freaking out because they didn't understand that there was a paper backup process, that the counting might take a little longer. And then some Trump campaign people or supporters found the phone numbers to the help desk and started clogging the lines. And none of that was really foreseen because all they were doing was focusing on cybersecurity and not thuggish behavior and human errors and other kinds of breakdowns.
Well, why do they need a system like that in the first place? Why couldn't they just hand count paper ballots?
Well, they could hand count the paper, but they just needed time to do it. and the time, and the networks wanted the results immediately. And we're going to see a lot of this in 2020, where the results will not be made available immediately, and the networks are going to behave impatiently.
Oh, so the so our what's left of American democracy is now at the mercy of the TV networks, who can't wait around for people to count ballots. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, I'm just coming over a hilltop here, so I'm sorry. What we saw was the network host did not know what the process was, so they freaked out. It's remarkable.
It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. So what you're saying is, in Iowa, there were paper ballots, and the source of the screw-up was that the networks didn't want to wait for the Democrats to count the paper ballots.
Right. Exactly.
Wonderful. What a country.
And Harvey, you know, we're going to see this in Nevada this coming Saturday. We're going to see this in the California primary on Super Tuesday, where people are voting by mail and people are voting on a new system in Los Angeles. And the final results may not be based on what is partially known or partially released. And the networks don't understand this. They just want to do the horse race coverage.
Well, they understand it. They don't care. I mean,
I don't know that they understand it. Honestly, Harvey, you know, I went to a demo. I pushed the Iowa Democratic Party to do a demo of their app that they were going to use for the election night reporting. And it was on the Friday before the Monday Iowa caucuses. And only two reporters showed up for it, me and a woman from Japan. So I don't know that these people really want to know about this.
We're talking with Steve Rosenfeld. Steve, what's your most recent book?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What is your most recent book?
Oh, my most recent book is called Democracy Betrayed. It talks about the anti-democratic features of the 2016 election. But you know, what did you observe about Iowa and New Hampshire? I mean, what's notable to you?
It was a mess, you know, and of course, it feeds into the narrative that the primary function of the Democratic National Committee at this point in time is to make sure that Bernie Sanders does not get the nomination. And, you know, wherever there's a screw-up, as you and I know, dating back to 2000, Florida, wherever there's a screw-up, somehow the establishment candidate seems to come out on top. I mean, it was clear to many people, or it seemed to be clear to many people, that Bernie was going to be the winner in Iowa, and that this was not a result that Tom Perez and the Democratic National Committee could live with. So there's a screw-up, and suddenly Buttigieg, you know, comes out on top by 2.5 votes, and Bernie is deprived of the momentum that a victory in Iowa would have given him. And, you know, that's the narrative that emerges when you have a situation like this.
Well, actually, I see it a little bit differently. I know why you could explain it that way, and but the way I see it is that Tom basically has been trying to accommodate Bernie by having the get to vote on the first round of balloting at the national convention, and also doing other things, like having a more transparent reporting process in Iowa about the actual rounds of voting and things like that. Because what happened in 2016 was Bernie won the popular vote in Iowa, just like he did this time. But that's not how they award delegates. They have this proportional representation system. And it's not quite like the Electoral College, but, you know, it's not entirely dissimilar. So, but what ended up happening in Iowa was that, and this is true in Nevada as well, it's in motion in Nevada. What happened in Iowa was the state party basically took the advice of contractors who said, trust us, you know, we will get it done. And they didn't get it done. And the DNC's oversight only pretty much went to cybersecurity around Russia-style hacking. They didn't think about much more mundane and simple stuff that tends to fall into, like, the unfamiliarity or voter suppression or exclusion or breakdown, human breakdown, or more frat boy-like sabotage, which is what the Trump campaign people did. So it's weird. You know, it still worked against Bernie, but it also deprived the entire contest and the Iowans of basically, you know, having a good decision. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, but here's the choice. The choice is either these guys are ridiculously stupid or incompetent, or they're corrupt. So
I would say that they're not corrupt, but they were ridiculously, I don't know if I say stupid and incompetent, but they certainly had a tremendous amount of hubris bordering on arrogance. And basically, I know these people who were at the top of the Iowa party. They are not power-hungry wheeler dealers. They basically were snookered by these Washington consultants and some people from San Francisco who said, we're the tech geniuses. We'll get it right. Trust us. Because these people worked with Obama, they worked with Hillary, and guess what? It failed. I mean, I could give you another specific example. So you have these mock trials at Harvard, where Robbie Mook, who ran Hillary's campaign, is part of it, and he's got a partner who was working for Republicans, and they try to assure the campaigns that these systems are secure for cybersecurity issues. But that's not the same as testing a real election, where you have, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people participating, and all kinds of unexpected things can go wrong and do go wrong because people are people and they make dumb errors. So the party was sort of overconfident, and it's run by these people who are young techies and who believe that, you know, everything will work as simple as ordering something from Amazon that just magically appears the next day. And elections aren't that simple. And by the way, the same kinds of dynamics were seen in Nevada, where with the early voting, they wanted to have people check in using iPads because they dumped the technology that was being used, that they planned to use, which was also what was used in Iowa. So what happened was they didn't have enough iPads that were pre-programmed to check people in at their early voting centers. So, I mean, Harvey, do you remember when we were covering the 2004 election in Ohio, and one of the first things you and Bob Trakas discovered was that that voting machines had been shorted in the minority, you know, in the precincts serving, you know, the communities of color. There weren't enough machines that created lines. Well, they didn't have enough iPads. They couldn't check people in. They had lines that were 2 to 3 hours long. I mean, if this was Georgia, and this was Brian Kemp's election administration, Democrats would be screaming bloody murder about voter suppression. But because this is the Democratic Party doing it to Democrats, because they think they know how to run these things, but they overlook stupid, you know, just obvious stuff. This is the kind of stuff that's going on. And I dare say, I suspect it will continue to go on through Saturday with Nevada's presidential caucuses. But does that make sense what I'm saying to you? How, you know, it's not just like it's an anti-Bernie thing. It's more like the state parties have more control than the DNC. They believe in this technology will always work, and it doesn't. You know, they don't test it in real-life situations. And then they're surprised that it doesn't work, and then they have these paper backup systems that they never really intended to use, and they scramble, and they don't have enough staff to handle it, to make a transition behind the scenes. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Well, it does make sense in a certain sense. But on the other hand, you're dealing with the highest profile event so far in 2020 in the most important election, arguably in U.S. history, because we are looking at a fascist dictatorship. And the Democratic Party, which is what people are relying on to save us from, you know, a Trump dictatorship, can't get their act together to run to report on the vote count in a small state where they know the whole world will be watching.
Correct.
And by the way,
it was my reporting early in 2019 that prompted the Democratic Party, the DNC Rules Committee, to convene a technical advisory committee because Iowa and Nevada wanted to do smartphone voting. So they basically pulled back on that because this was the replacement system. And the great irony is it wasn't a very tech-heavy system in Iowa compared to what we're going to see in Nevada. But what happened was in the central counting area, their software failed. Their calculating software failed. And in these precincts where everybody was on their phones taking selfies and doing other stuff, there wasn't enough bandwidth to get online to send the results in or to even log in because the back-end passwords wasn't working. Now, what they're going to do in Nevada is way more sophisticated and way more technology-dependent and way more Wi-Fi-dependent. And, you try to ask them questions, and they don't respond. They just keep saying we're going to be the most transparent, accessible, and wonderful caucus yet. But the thing here is, it's almost like there's a loophole here around this technology. Nobody views technology at the DNC as a standard way of oversight. But when you talk about the sabotage with Bernie, here's where the sabotage with Bernie is going to come in. We saw it at last night's debate when the question was, will the person who has the most delegates going into the convention, should that person get the nomination? And Bernie, of course, said yes, and everybody else said no. And what does that mean? That means you have the likelihood, if there's no one has a majority of going into the convention, of a brokered convention. And according to the rules that were supposed to accommodate Bernie after 2016, the superdelegates, who are one-sixth of the delegates, which are party officials and labor leaders and stuff like that, elected members of Congress, governors, things like that, they don't get to vote on the first round, but they'll come in on the second round and all the rounds after that. So basically, that's what they're referring to. So if Bernie can't get 50% plus one of the delegates going in on the first vote, then these other folks are going to participate, and who knows who they're going to pull behind as a quote-unquote consensus candidate, whatever that means. And, I mean, you're the historian here. Wasn't the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago one where it was a brokered convention and Hubert Humphrey ended up getting the nomination, not that he was even running as a candidate, but he was, quote-unquote, the party's pick? That's the closest precedent that I can think of what may happen this summer.
Well, really, 2016 is a good enough example. I mean, there's a big debate about it, of course. People disagree, but you can make a very strong case that Bernie was the rightful nominee and that the screw-ups in California, where people were not allowed to vote in the Democratic primary if they had been registered as independents, or Greens, that with the huge numbers of votes and delegates coming in California and then a similar disenfranchisement in Brooklyn involving over 100,000 voters, you can make a pretty strong case, and many people do, that Bernie was the rightful nominee in 2016.
Well,
the regular Democrats like to say, oh, he would have lost. But Hillary lost, so or she didn't fight. As you and I know, a strong case could also be made that Hillary was the rightful winner, even in the Electoral College. So, you know, we have a very dark situation here. And
yeah, it is a dark situation. It is a dark situation. I looked at those numbers in 2016 in New York and California, and I don't draw those conclusions. I think that what happened in California was that the Associated Press, on the day before the California primary, had a nationwide story that said, we have called all of the delegates and superdelegates, and Hillary is the winner. And that was on the front pages, every paper in the state. And it was a tremendous disincentive for turnout. And I know people say stuff about the provisional ballots and the registration for these, and stuff like that. But I don't see those numbers adding up and giving Bernie enough to have won the state. Maybe he would have won a little more, but not enough to have won the state. And I also looked at the New York numbers, and it's the same thing. Even if those 120,000 people from Brooklyn were allowed to vote, you know, the margin in that state was Hillary's margin was way bigger. But that's not the point. There are all of these, you know, micro injuries and things that just shouldn't be part of this process. And I agree with you on that. And, you know, I've been to these events where there was one in New Hampshire where all the candidates give 7-minute speeches. And when Bernie is up on that podium, nobody who is a member of the DNC or tied into the National Party is clapping or cheering or anything. They're dead quiet. It's, you know, they don't want him as the nominee. It's completely clear to me. So
yeah,
but Perez did change the rules and has, believe it or not, been trying to accommodate Bernie. But we have to see what ends up happening. I mean, listen, in Iowa in 2016, the party just announced at 1:30 or 2 in the morning that Hillary had some, small number, single digit number, more delegate equivalents, end of story, done. No data, no voting totals, no evidence trail, no nothing. And part of the problem that Iowa faced was that they tried to, and they were required to by the DNC's Unity Reform Commission, release that data, release the popular vote, which is the first alignment, release how it changed in the second alignment, the delegate allocations, et cetera, et cetera. They were trying to gather and make public 4 times as much data as they ever did in the past, and they screwed up. They couldn't handle it. By the way, we're supposed to see the same kind of data released in Nevada, and we'll see what happens there. But that was a pro-Bernie reform, just like the superdelegates not voting on the first round this coming summer. It was a pro-Bernie reform. So the party, Tom Perez, believe it or not, he's tried to bend over to work with Bernie, but at these DNC events and at these campaign events, you know, who are associated with the centrists, you know, absolutely don't want him. And we saw that on that debate stage last night when people said, well, we'll let the process run its course, which is a synonym for, well, if you don't get it on the first vote, all the superdelegates will kick in and pick somebody else to sort of push you out of the way. And, you know, that's what I see happening.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. I think Tom Perez is doing his best to make it look like he's giving Bernie a clean road, because I think they understand now from 2016 that if they don't have Bernie's people, they're not going to win. So they want Bernie's people, but they don't want Bernie. And I think Tom Perez, who I've met, and let's just say I was not impressed. I met him in Las Vegas, actually, at a Democratic National Committee meeting. they want to give the appearance that they're giving Bernie a clean shot, but I guarantee you that they're going to doing everything they can to make sure it's close but no prize. I mean, as far as I can tell, and you know these people better than me on a personal level, but on a mega political, macro political scale, I think that the core of the Democratic Party establishment would rather have Trump in the White House than Bernie. And for any number of obvious reasons. I mean, first of all, they're ideologically closer to Trump. If Trump's in the White House, all they got to do to raise money is send out terrifying emails and the money will pour in. If Bernie's in the White House, they actually have to do some work. You know, they have to work on Medicare for All and or against it, you know, or other programs that they really don't want because their corporate sponsors don't want them. And I think we have to confront the reality here that Bernie Sanders is not really a socialist. I mean, it's a very clear definition of socialism, which is that the among other things, that the public controls the means of production. In other words, the major productive facilities. And Bernie has very explicitly said that he does not support that. So what Bernie Sanders, and more power to him, it's his decision, but Bernie Sanders is basically a New Deal Democrat. He is not to the left of Franklin Roosevelt, or really of John Kennedy, towards the end of Kennedy's reign, or domestically of Lyndon Johnson. I mean, obviously, Bernie Sanders would never support the war in Vietnam, which perpetrated by Lyndon Johnson, but Johnson's social programs are basically where Bernie is at. And even that is too much as for the Democratic corporate establishment. So at this point in time, they have a problem because nobody is going to defeat Donald Trump without the support of the millennials. And Bernie is the millennials' candidate, ironically. He's the grumpy old professor that you go to the demonstration with, right? You know, he's the classic old new leftist. Came out of the 1960s academic environment. All the hyper-intellectual students for a democratic society, and of which I was a part, and you know, the people who went and demonstrated at the 1968 convention, and I'll talk about 68 in a minute. You know, that's where Bernie comes from, and people love him because, A, his politics are really what's needed in this society today, and, B, because he's been consistent. He's incorruptible. He's dependable, reliable. What you see is what you get. And he's been, you know, incredibly consistent in an era where everybody dances around and nothing anybody says means anything. I mean, Bernie is truth with a capital T in an era where the truth is the enemy of the state here. So, I don't know how to express in a civil way what I think of Tom Perez. I mean, I met him. I gave him our book, you know, and he looked at me like I had handed him some toilet paper. You know, absolutely no interest in exploring what you and me and Bob Fitrakis had made clear, and Greg Pallas and Bev Harris since 2000. No, zero. This is the head of the Democratic Party. You know, I'm older than he is, been around a lot longer than he has, and he looked at me like I was a homeless person asking for a buck, you know, handing him our book. So, you know, my sense is, you know, not to be overly conspiratorial, but let's deal with reality here. The Democratic Party establishment has an interest in giving the illusion that they're giving Bernie a fair shot at the nomination. But they're not going to let him get it. And then in the second round, and I'm going to throw out two names that I think could get the Democratic nomination. Adam Schiff and Sherrod Brown. You know, in a brokered convention where you go in, and this has happened before in history. It happened in the Republican Party in 1920, where it's just how we wound up with Warren G. Harding. And actually in 84, when we wound up with Walter Mondale, although he was an actual candidate, you know, in a brokered convention, they will turn to establishment figures who have name recognition and who the corporations are comfortable with. And the two most likely ones that I see, as I mentioned, are Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio, who's actually genuinely a progressive. I know him. He's a good guy. And Adam Schiff, who I've also met, who has huge name recognition and might attract enough of a progressive base to get himself elected. That I think, is a possible scenario. I do not think that the Democratic Party will allow Bernie to get the nomination in any way, shape, or form. And you have followed the machinery here. You know, those of us who think in conspiratorial terms, and I'm not, you know, my book, The People's Spiral of U.S. History, at the end, I have a long section on it's called Conspiracy Theories and Actual Conspiracies. And, you know, I can run through the Lusitania, the Maine, the Gulf of Tonkin, the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the killings of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy. I mean, these are all situations where conspiracy theories are more credible than the mainstream explanation. So I can see a situation where Tom Perez and the Democrats will do everything they can to make it look fair, but somehow Bernie will fall short on the first ballot and will disappear after that. Your thoughts, Steve? Steve Rosenfeld, are you still with us? Did we lose you? And John Burns?
Well,
you'll probably have to call back in. I think we lost him temporarily. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about how this is going to play out here? I mean, we've seen how badly they can screw up in Iowa, whether it was meant to be or not. Now, with New Hampshire, we seem to have gotten a pretty straightforward reporting. I mean, they've been doing it a long time in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah. So the phone line dropped and I'm back on. Can you hear me now? Is this clear enough?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay.
So
New Hampshire was clearer because it is a government-run primary, and they've been doing this for a long time, and it's done like more of a military operation. It's overstaffed, and I went to the one precinct that has the largest student turnout in the state, and there, students could do same-day registration and basically vote. There's just a lot of disinformation from the Republicans about why they shouldn't. And they had 12 tables set up to handle hundreds of students. They actually registered about 1,500 people that day. And so it was all about getting kids to come and show up. This is completely different than what we saw, in early voting in Nevada. And, you know, it's a whole different thing. One is these caucuses are amateur hours versus people who are sometimes more professional. Not always, but usually more professional.
Well, are there more, after Nevada, are there more caucuses coming up?
Yes, but they don't really, but no one's going to pay attention to them. There's Alaska, Hawaii, Wyoming, and Kansas. And those are party
primaries. Well, only one of
primaries.
The Democrats will carry Hawaii, but they won't carry Wyoming, Alaska, or what was the other state?
Yeah. So those are party-run primaries, but it's the same thing. You know, they rent a voting system, and they have contractors do it for them. And these are not easy things to do. There's a lot that can go wrong, and a lot that can get overlooked, and that's what we keep seeing or hearing about.
Well, I'm sure they can handle all four Democrats in Wyoming. But, you know, the bottom line here is that, California and, I guess you got South Carolina coming up next, right, after Nevada?
Yeah, after Nevada, it's South Carolina. Then we have Super Tuesday. And, we have all the big swing states are coming up. There's Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, through the end of April. Pennsylvania to the end of April.
just joined us. How you doing, buddy? John Brakey, you with us?
Hey, yeah, yeah, I just got in. Great. I'm sorry for calling in late.
That's all right. We're having a spirited discussion here. So we'll talk about the primaries, obviously. And there's no doubt that Bernie is going to win California very big. And Elizabeth Warren will come in second.
Probably.
I mean, I would be very surprised at a different outcome. So then, you know, God willing, his health holds out, which, you know, I'm nervous about, but Bernie obviously is going to go all the way, and he'll come very close to getting the nomination, and then there's going to be a decision made. And the decision is, will the corporate Democrats allow Bernie to get the nomination? And I don't think there's any way that that's going to happen. I just don't see it. They're even nervous about Elizabeth Warren, who's much more moderate than Bernie is, but reasonably progressive. I mean, Buttigieg and Klobuchar, forget about it. You know, they're just very, very corporate conservative. Bloomberg is going to have to really, you know, gain some debating skills, or he's not going anywhere. So as far as I'm concerned, and Biden's not going anywhere either. I mean, that's obvious. He's not gonna be a contender in any way, shape, or form in terms of the delegate vote count coming into the convention. So me, I think, and we can we'll have an interesting discussion in November, but you can write this down. I would say, I'm probably the only person in the country saying this, I would say the real race for the Democratic nomination is between Bernie and Elizabeth versus a dark horse that the Democratic Party is going to choose, and that the two likeliest candidates are Adam Schiff and Sherrod Brown. Now, you heard it here first. But, you know, Steve, you and John are going to be following these primaries. So you've discounted the upcoming caucus. Nevada will be important.
Yeah.
And Nevada is a state that the Democrats could actually carry. And they'll carry Hawaii, but Hawaii is not very big. And Hawaii is very progressive. I'm assuming that Hawaii will go very strongly for Bernie. So then we get into the nitty-gritty of Super Tuesday. And you're going to have the Midwestern states, the swing states. And who runs those primaries, Steve?
Those are government-run. You know, those are more professional. But the problem or challenge with those is that they're going to be using new voting systems in some of these places for the first time. And that's going to cause other issues around unfamiliarity, which could, whether it's poll workers or people in line or... And it's just going to cause confusion that will undermine their credibility, whatever the results are.
John Brakey, you're the expert on voting machines. What do you see happening in these Midwestern primaries, which Steve has laid out? I mean, are we looking at more chaos?
You know, I think they're going to be a lot better run, and if something was to happen, you're not going to see it because you're talking about real pros. And, you know, it's hard to say. It really is. I mean, you know, yeah, it seems like Bernie's on the out looking in. He's always being run down, and the games are played. You know, I love his campaign because he points out something that's very important. Hey, folks, it's not me, it's us. And he's right. He's letting up a movement, and people need to realize that we're all part of it. What I'm doing, even though for me it's not about the horses on the track, it's about the track conditions and reporting that. And yes, we have a right to be concerned. The big fear that I see coming on right now is that we know that transparency is a solution, and because of them maybe trying to pull something. They may go back into their old bag of tricks and saying, security by obscurity, I cannot give you that document. I will not disclose things. That is a big fear. And we know that if we haven't got transparency in a verified election, I'm sorry, I just don't think that they're really all that good, because we know how a logic and accuracy test can be gamed. I mean, you know, myself, I'm leaving Tuesday. On the 25th, I head into Ohio, and then I'm off to Michigan with my lawyer for a week, and then it's on to Pennsylvania, and I get back here on the 10th, and again, I leave again to go North Carolina. These are states that I'm focusing on, and I'm trying to find funding to hire more people in order to get more people to learn what we're doing to do it. But Steve's got the hot news. I wish I heard his program, because I can't wait to read his article about what he has found happened in New Hampshire. And what
we've had a situation here where, you know, you've got uncontrolled chaos or controlled chaos, which none of the upcoming primaries, as far as I can tell, are totally secure in the reliability of the vote count. I mean, is that a safe assumption, Steve Rosenfeld? Or how much confidence can we have in the vote count in the states that are coming up?
Well, it really varies state by state. And the variable in state by state is the system that's being used to create the record of the ballots and to count them. And, you know, without getting lost in the details, there's a range of new technologies that are being used. Some are better, some are worse. Some have good elements, some have bad elements. And what I mean by bad is there is just less human evidence trails as opposed to computer-generated evidence trails. And we can, you know, we've had this discussion many times before, but this is the landscape. And unfortunately, the timing for introducing these new systems could not be worse. It's a very unhappy coincidence or accident that after years and years of having substandard and old gear, we now, in many places, are having new stuff that's being introduced in very high-stakes contests. And, you know, we don't know how it will perform. You know, we always hope for the best, but, you know, experience tells us that that's a little bit, you know, naive, right? So that's where
yeah.
we are.
John, what do you think there?
I think Steve's right on. And again, elections aren't any good unless they're transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. We need proof of winner. We need more than ever that on this election, democracy is on the ballot. Cynicism is going to wind up destroying this country, because at the very end, either side, the loser's not going to accept. The last time he won, he declared he lost. What's going to happen when he really does? What's going to happen when they go to verify that they find out that ballot images and public records were destroyed? Because maybe somebody's not stealing this one. Maybe they're protecting the right to steal in the next one. Who knows? But there's troubling things on the software and all of these systems.
Yeah, and the hardware, and the stripping of the voter rolls. And Steve, you said something that we let go by that was actually totally shocking. In the Iowa primary, you said that somebody, I think you said Republican operatives, was calling in to the system with the express purpose of screwing it up. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was all of the 1,600 or 1,700 caucus chairs were supposed to use an app to report their results of the voting in their room. And when mostly the app wasn't working and the back end wasn't able to receive it, they instead did what they have done for many years, which is call the results in. But the center that was taking those calls was also supposed to be receiving calls for any other problems, like bad behavior or somebody's lost or who knows what. And that number got put out on these message boards that were used by Trump supporters, and they started calling in to jam the lines to further delay the actual reporting of the results. And that's been widely covered. And the thing about it is the Iowa Democratic Party and all of their incredible security preparations never considered that a low-tech, thuggish, frat boy-like intervention would screw things up. And it did.
That is truly astounding and got virtually no coverage. So the reality is that how do we know these people were Republicans who were doing this? How do we know who they were?
Because they were bragging about it on, you know, their Reddit and these other message boards. It was kind of a, you know, wild and woolly moment.
And we saw this, of course, in Florida 2000, where the infamous Brooks Brothers mob, whose attorney was Brett Kavanaugh, turned up at the South Florida polling stations where the people, volunteers, were trying to do recounts. And this basic fascist assault prevented the recount, which facilitated George W. Bush becoming president. And we just saw it again.
Harvey, John can tell you what he saw in Florida in 2018 in Broward County, where there was another mob outside where the vote counting was going on, and it was Republican generated. I mean, you know, this is not new. John was there. He could tell you that.
Absolutely.
Well,
and it was a mob, and they were very unintelligent people who were led by an authoritarian figure, okay? And, you know, it was Trump, it was Fox Trump TV kind of style.
Well, and we just saw it in Ohio, where the bought, corrupt, gerrymandered Ohio legislature passed a billion-dollar bailout for the two nuclear plants up on the lake, and a referendum petition was circulated so that the public could vote on this bailout, and the nuclear industry bought in what they call blockers, which is basically Gestapo thugs, and prevented the gathering of the petitions, and successfully kept the referendum off the ballot. So this appears to be a trend, and we can certainly expect a lot of it coming up in 2020, where all sorts of opportunity for fascist thuggery will be available, especially when you have a Democratic Party that's so completely inept and corrupt. So
yeah,
this is not a happy situation. Steve, you're headed to Nevada. Do we expect any of this kind of stuff going on in Nevada now on Saturday?
Well, we don't know. But, you know, what's happening in Nevada is that the party is creating two records of all the votes. One is electronic and one is paper. But they really have no intention of relying on the paper records to do the counting in the first place. They're using a fairly sophisticated mix of Apple and Google technology, iPads and Google Forms that basically feed into underlying spreadsheets, you know, where every voter and every vote by every voter and every precinct in early voting and every result from the precinct caucuses on Saturday gets fed into it. And there's just a lot that could go wrong in terms of the actual coordination and data entry and whether people can get on Wi-Fi. And because they're so reliant on the electronics, they're not really well staffed to deal with, you know, having to resume this whole thing on paper. And that's where it broke down in Iowa. And there, too, was where the mainstream media didn't have a clue. You know, they freaked out. They could have said, hey, we just got to wait a little bit here, and we'll get accurate results. But that's not what happened. You know, they all wanted to do the horse race coverage, and they started yelling and screaming at the Iowa Democratic Party because they were ignorant of what the actual counting process was. And I suspect we're going to see these kinds of delays this Saturday. Look, Harvey, the Nevada Democratic Party only yesterday, released the app that they were going to have their caucus chairs use on Saturday, the 17th, in hundreds of locations. So, and they're assuming everyone will use it perfectly. That's just not logical. And I'm not cheering for failure. I'm just saying, come on. This is hubris. This is naive. This is, the stakes are too high to make, for these amateur hour assumptions. But you'll see. You will see.
Unbelievable. John Breaker, are you going to be in Nevada?
No, I'm going to be heading, like I said, off to Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and I'm just grateful to know that Steve's going to be there because he's unique. I mean, hey, I just want to say this right now. They couldn't even handle the app in Iowa. Can you imagine if they had the smartphone crazy technology that they were talking about that Steve was able to educate him because he's so well-informed? And that's where people need to tie onto his blog. If you want to understand elections, his writings are right there.
Well, this is about as disturbing a conversation as you can have. I mean, allegedly the United States is a first world country. The Democratic Party has been around since 1828. You would think that at some point they'd figure out how to run a primary election. And this is where
I would say one thing in conclusion to what I see happening is that, a lot of people are tuning in. It's like nothing I've ever seen before in my 15 years doing elections, okay? And they'll know the fix is in, and if the Democrats try screwing Sanders again, they have just committed suicide and reelected Trump, okay? Because they won't come back. They will walk away. A lot of them will vote. Not vote, or if they do vote, they will vote for Armageddon, for a showdown. Let the system collapse. And that scares the hell out of me.
Well, you would have to presume, number one, as a veteran myself of an organization that was blown apart by COINTELPRO, the FBI counterinsurgency, underground force, you would have to assume that there are some Republican operatives inside the Democratic Party who are just rubbing their hands over this. And that, whatever they can do to make the Democrats fall apart, they will do. And so far,
yeah,
they've done a
I think it's
job.
The big money that the Democratic Party is afraid of losing, because a lot of them are just, listen, this system is built with a carriage being pulled by a white horse and a black horse, okay? And one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. Not all, okay? I don't mean to paint that kind of picture. But money influences elections, okay?
Yeah, it buys elections.
Yeah.
And, we're looking at a situation here. I mean, I just read the assessments of the debate performances. And, Elizabeth Warren jumped in there, and she jumped in right. Man, she jumped right on Mike Bloomberg. That was fun to watch. And, she restored, she got some of her moxie back. Clearly, Buttigieg and Klobuchar are not players. There's no way they're going to get him. This is Bernie and Elizabeth running more or less together. Bloomberg is kind of a wild card, but he clearly doesn't have it to run a popular campaign. So what we have in the Democratic Party here is Bernie and Elizabeth up against whoever the party's going to come up with at the last minute.
Yeah.
They have, the moderate Democrats have failed to field a credible candidate. Oh, my God, we're done. Hey, listen, John and Steve, we're going to continue this. An incredible hour. No one else is doing this, but Steve will talk to you from Nevada later, and John, we'll be back in touch. Thank you, crew in New York, and it just gets. All right, well, we'll talk in a couple weeks. It just gets wilder and wilder. Thank you, guys. We'll be back.
And so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging.